Oxford, 1179. The boy can smell it before he sees its source, the stomach-twisting, sweet, sour smell of rotting flesh. He leans into his little horse for comfort. The horse, too, was a mistake. He sees that now. Sneaking out of his uncle's stables, he had thought only of speed and stealth, and the little hobby was light and quiet and knew him. When he joined up with the pair of older players who for nearly two moons were his performing and traveling companions, the horse again seemed right. People mistook Benedict for the son of the smaller, fairer man, and this aroused sympathy as well as enthusiasm for their music. The animal was right for a son, but for a man on his own, he is aware of how ridiculous he must look. It was for the music's sake that he had first run away. It has been with him always, this gift, this curse. Tunes come to him as easily as leaves come to the trees. He keeps time evenly and never has to count. When the two Galliards had come to Evesham, he saw in them the skills he needed and the life he lacked. They knew a handful of old ballads, but their strength and fame lay in the making of songs to suit whatever town they were in. They gathered gossip during the day in the streets and taverns and gave it back to the townspeople at night in songs and jokes. They invited him to play one afternoon, and that was that. The following night, he snuck off to join them. At first, it was good. He was learning. He was making his music. This was what he wanted. But with the beginning of the warm weather, the two older men had begun to quarrel. First, it was something about a woman, then about a song, then about money, until the thread of reason was lost. Two nights running, they had let their quarrel seep into the show, exchanging words on the tiny stage between songs, then coming to blows. The crowd, full of eruptions of its own, had scarcely noticed it, or cheered it on, or thought it a part of the act. But Benedict saw the blade in the bigger man's hand and smelled danger, as he had in his uncle's house. Last night, while they slept, he took his share of the food, saddled his horse with the velvet touch he had learned, too, in his uncle's house, and slipped off again. Hungry and aching, sores on his legs from the little horse, he distracts himself from his body and from the smell, stronger now, by humming bits of various tunes. In his bag, he carries three pipes, a drum, a wooden bowl strung with catgut, and a dozen other carved things that with his breath and fingers can be coaxed into music. Even now he is tempted to stop, tie up the horse, take out his pipe, and see one song through. He knows this is his fault, his worst habit. Always he will choose the tune over time or food or circumstance. He daydreams, his aunt used to say, like a rich man's son. But Benedict cannot help his nature. He lives only for the music. As he rounds the field, he sees the source of the rotten smell. Beneath a flapping mound of cloth, a pair of legs, or what used to be legs, emerge, gnawed at, nearer to meat than man. A few feet away, against the trunk of an oak, another rotting body is slumped. A crow picks at strings of flesh. Flies swarm the slices where the black blood shines and hardens. Benedict's heart jerks up and down inside his chest. He wills himself not to be faint or sick. He chucks his horse hard in the side with his heels, and as he rides, he does not allow himself to look back. Those wounds are old, he thinks. The murderer must already be far from here. All I have to do is get to town. In Oxford, there will be a fair and people to hear my music and food and maybe a bed. All I have to do is get to town.